Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're having a walk through the very hot hills today. It's been murder walking up this 40-minute incline. Gosh, it's absolutely scorching today. Nice though, it's very beautiful and very green because we've just had quite a few days of really heavy rain, so everything's looking really happy. Anyway, on with the podcast. So, today, I wanted to talk about empowerment, particularly empowerment of the people, as we definitely need quite a bit of that at the moment, and I know a lot of us are feeling very disempowered, and it's quite depressing. So I just wanted to talk about a few things that have happened recently that I think are quite significant. I mean, there's been a lot of things, but the thing that I wanted to just highlight to start off with was what was meant to be Trump's massive comeback went on his campaign trail. It was his first rally and it was going to be a transition to greatness or whatever it is that he says. I was expecting it to be packed and full of adoring fans and he was going to press the flesh at a slight COVID permissible distance, I assume. He was expecting this to really kickstart things for him, launching him to be re-elected again in November. Now, as it turned out, the crowd was very much less than expected by the organisers. Now, we think that there was a campaign. And we're not sure who suggested this. It could have been one or more than one person. But I did see a little video by a woman, just an ordinary woman. I think she was a grandmother actually, saying, "Come on, kids, let's all book tickets and not go, so that they think there's a huge number coming, and then it will just crash and burn because there'll be hardly anyone there." And apparently this video had quite a few million views. And it would appear, so we are speculating a little bit here because the facts aren't in as to how many of these TikTok users bought their, well, they didn't buy the tickets because they're free. They bought the tickets with the deliberate revolutionary intention of not going. Now,
dirty tricks.
Yeah, particularly love about this is the fact that they could completely humiliate the most powerful man in their country, who is destroying their country
and the world.
And the world, yeah, by not leaving the house, and they can do it entirely for free. Now, that's pretty empowering. And I felt that anybody who had bought a ticket and become part of this movement would be feeling incredibly empowered, because it certainly looked like their very, very easy method to completely mess up Trump's comeback and totally humiliate him really worked. And I'll be pretty sure that they're going to do it again next time. And I think a lot of these people were quite young as well, say 15-year-olds. Again, it's, you know, the exact figures aren't in, and the Trump administration played it down. They would rather the lack of attendance being seen as maybe just a failure or an administrative failure perhaps, rather than them being actually completely shafted by a load of teenagers.
Yeah. Well, I can call for cover from the pandemic. They can say, well, people didn't come because they want to do their social distancing. And of course that was a criticism of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations that incidentally are still going on all over the place. the organisers were told that they were being irresponsible for organising such things when you're supposed to stay away from everybody.
Yeah.
Because we're still in the throes of this pandemic. I mean, Trump plays it according to need, you know. He was obviously willing to pack out a stadium of people and fuck the pandemic, fuck COVID. On the other hand, when they don't turn up, he's saying people who are being sensible because of the pandemic. But the thing about the TikTok phenomenon is that in the expectation of getting many, many thousands more people than they did, that they put extensions outside.
Did they put a big screen up? And
I think they put.
I don't think they planned for him to go outside and do like a second address, hadn't he? Because they'd expected so many more.
I've got no idea. They were going to channel it out to the outdoors on a big screen and put accommodation out there for many, many more people. As it was, the stadium is like a 19,000 capacity stadium, I understand. Don't hold me to these numbers, but they're probably in ballpark.
Expecting to fill it and then some, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, they got 6,000 and all of the back ranks weren't. I mean, they could have socially distanced, but they didn't. They huddled together.
Probably so. It would look better in the filming and the shots and everything.
Well, you know, you can photograph it in certain ways and make it look far more.
Impressive. A lot more people there. But the reason why I think that the TikTok thing did work is because. Why did the organisers expect such a massive turnout? And surely this must have been based on how many people had booked tickets.
Yeah, I think something did go on. I mean, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, tweeted at Donald Trump, saying, you plonker, all the reasons you're giving for the poor turnout are completely wrong, because there was a whole generation of young people the TikTok generation all went and bought tickets to screw you over, and you've been had, you plonker. Yeah. I mean, words to those effect, you know, obviously in her own language.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there's enough evidence for AOC to bang that out on Twitter and get like a million hits or something like that, you know, a million likes. And that.
And the reason why this is so empowering is because now it actually becomes possible for these teenagers to completely shaft his entire re-election campaign, because they could do this every single time, because Trump really relies on these rallies to get his support and the enthusiasm of the crowds. But if there's hardly anyone there, he can't do that, can he?
Well, he's about creating the impression that there's a huge base.
Yeah.
Bear in mind that Trump lost the popular vote by 3 million votes because of the stupid electoral college system. He still won. I mean, if you study that system, first thing you discover that America, like the UK, is not a democracy. They trumpet the democracy angle all the time. And when they go and invade somebody's country because they want the oil, they claim that they're exporting democracy because they are the experts on it. You study the electoral college system for electing the president. Their country's not a frigging democracy. And all the way the Senate is elected. You've got states with under a million population sending two senators, and you've got California sending two senators with a population of, I don't know what it is, 40 million, 30 million or something? But it's huge, it's the size of a Western European country. California gets the same representation as some of these very thinly populated states. It's a fucking travesty. The whole thing's been bought by big money as well. Big oil, big pharma. Big military. America's not a democracy, but the thing about these kids just doing that, the idea circulating, the very simple idea circulating, and then just loads of them just doing it. It shows that there are all kinds of minimally difficult opportunities for disrupting the thing. Because the system is actually, to my mind, really, really fragile. It's hanging by a thread.
Yeah.
But because we don't see it, it's an emperor's new clothes situation. We have actually been pretty well conditioned into thinking, Tina, there is no alternative. no alternative to neoliberal capitalism. No alternative to austerity. No alternative to militarism. No alternative to relying on oil and letting the planet fry. Yeah. It does feel like there's this enormous rock in the path, and as lean on it as we do and push it as we do, we can't move it. But I think that's actually an illusion. I think the whole thing is terribly fragile. And I think a lot of the Black Lives Matter demos did show that. I mean, bringing down the Colston statue, just to harp on about that again for the 100th time, sparked off a whole series of events and conversations and debates and riots and frenzies and advancements for the idea that we can, through collective action, make progress, save the world. And that was just one simple incident that took 30 seconds and then another 5 minutes to roll the bastard into the harbour. So yeah, I mean, it tells us that with imagination and with an understanding of quite how fragile the whole kind of setup is, that there'll be many, many more opportunities like that to disrupt. The thing about it is that it's made it more difficult for Trump to create the impression that he has this huge base. And he does have a fairly large base, but it's not necessarily decisive. It becomes decisive if people think it's decisive. It's the same with the Tories. Even though Johnson's got this 80-strong majority and these unlimited executive powers he's granted himself, he's still actually quite fragile. As Trotsky said, you can bring down a state with 1,000 people.
But I think this feeling of empowerment that those TikTok users who joined in with that must be feeling now will inspire them to look for maybe more things they could do along those lines. Yeah. They might find that there's some other cracks that they could exploit.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people, you know, you can get overconfident, but
You can.
The trouble with feeling disempowered is you start to feel hopeless, and then you just kind of think, oh, no, it can't be changed.
Well,
or it's going to be so difficult, like you said, moving this huge boulder out of the way.
Yeah.
And it drains your energy. It does actually drain your energy to make the changes you want to make.
Yeah.
But when you feel empowered, you have that spark and energy and determination
and
to change.
You can push through. I mean, the energy was there, I think, in the Corbyn movement. But there was, with hindsight, a poorly worked out strategy and not much by way of tactics and an underestimation of
how low the Tories were going to sink.
Well, the Cummings style, Cambridge Analytica style manoeuvrings that really won the Tories the election. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. The mainstream media on their side,
just relentlessly lying about Corbyn, you know.
But also a Cambridge Analytica targeted, using psychometrics and behavioural science and data analysis and data collection, to my mind, from what I can see, was decisive in the election.
Yeah. Well, not Cambridge Analytica.
Not Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica is the style.
The style, yeah.
Yeah.
Many companies sprang up in their place.
Cambridge Analytica folded. It had to fold. It was under such a cloud.
Yeah, but they knew who to contact because they'd worked on the Brexit campaign for them.
Yeah.
So they knew which people they needed. Yeah.
Well, the central experts regrouped and formed something. I forget the name now. And I'm hoping they're going to get some kind of whistleblower on that at some point, even though they're being very cagey. But it was definitely, Cummings was at Johnson's side throughout this election. There's no way they didn't use those techniques.
Yeah. And it was obvious, you could see it very plainly.
I think what they were doing, they were discouraging voters in the old red wall. and people were staying at home. There were poor turnouts in those places because they felt disempowered, and it reaches a point where it paralyses.
Yeah.
And of course they want that. The powers that be will use immiseration to control the population, and the way of controlling the population is to demoralise them and to make them feel disempowered. But these kids, they're fresh, you know, and they're digital natives, and they see right through the Trump agenda. Somebody said in the UK general election, if only under 35s could vote, there would be no Tory MPs.
No.
Something like that. The future's going to be a leftist, I would say. And it will have to in some ways. It's like without cooperation and without international cooperation, not hegemony by an international capitalist class, but international cooperation between peoples, the environmental degradation isn't going to be halted and reversed. And people think it's just climate. It's not. It's climate, it's the sea, it's water, it's soil, it's the whole caboodle. Industrial civilization of the type that we've got is just compromising the ecosphere more than it can handle. If it's going to remain hospitable to human life. Just that means we've got to go left. You know, put left in inverted commas. There'll be new forms thought out, new strategies, new tactics, a completely new context. I mean, the digital and tech framework is a context that my generation didn't encounter for the formative part of our lives. We've got a whole generation just grown up inside this stuff. And globally, this technology is present all over the place, even in poor countries. Somebody on Twitter, I think it was, or somewhere on social media, some woman, some mother, you know, she said, I was saying to my kids about the poor turnout at the Trump rally, and my 15-year-old said, oh yeah, me and all my mates, we all booked a ticket. Just like matter of fact.
Yeah.
You know, they just saw it straight away, like intuitively, oh, let's fuck them up.
Yeah.
And create an embarrassment and help to prick the ideological propaganda bubble that Trump's got this massive unstoppable base.
Yeah.
He hasn't. I mean, he just say in the 2016, he didn't even win the popular vote. There wasn't very much in it. 700,000 votes in it. It's the same. It's, the UK is not a democracy.
Becoming less so by the day.
Becoming less so by the day as they move boundaries to favour their party. And you've got similar things in the US. You've got voter discouragement of voters, which they've used in the US forever, and it was along racial lines originally. Even though technically black people could vote, they were intimidated at polling stations for decades. After they gained the franchise. So you got all that kind of stuff. But there was, I don't know, 1,500 votes in it between a Labour government and the Tory government, but that devolves out, given the system, to an 80-seat majority for Johnson. And then in the context of the pandemic, he grabs himself unlimited executive power. He's very dangerous.
Yeah.
But why I like the TikTok thing is a couple of reasons. One is that it shows ingenuity and creativity. And if we're going to put the world on the right tracks, that is going to be needed. A lot of the old methods and the old paradigms just don't apply. And that we need to realise, secondly, that electoral politics isn't the be-all and end-all. And in fact, in the forms that we've got it, it's pretty corrupt. We're not really that democratic. But nevertheless, we need to capture the state. Otherwise, the powers that be can turn the army on the people, or a militarised police on the people, and do all kinds of nefarious shit through their control of the forces of violence in society, namely the police and the military. So we've got to capture the state, but it's not enough on its own. You know, to capture the stag, Liber has had to sort of turn itself into a junior Tory party like it did under Blair. The only time it won three consecutive elections was when it just imitated the Tories and did all kinds of neoliberal shit across the working class in the name of a Labour Party under Tony Blair. He did one or two good things, but basically I've got a list actually on my computer of all the really shitty legislation that he got passed. Anti-union stuff, privatisation. You know, just and turning society into that kind of Tina society. There is no alternative other than neoliberal capitalism. And there was no way they were going to let Corbyn win. We'd got rumblings from retired security heads, MI5, MI6 Wallace. We've got rumblings from retired army generals. We've got Pompeo in the US saying, oh, that Corbyn's a dangerous man. We'll have to put a stop to it before it happens. There was no way they were going to let it happen. And of course the press weighed in, and then Cummins' gang did their dirty work on the actual election itself. No way they're going to let it happen. So everybody's saying, well, if we're going to win, we've got to kind of actually sort of be a bit like them. So this is kind of a mistake. But the way to mitigate that is enormous social movements, enormous grassroots movements.
Yeah.
And that's why I like Black Lives Matter, because I don't think it was just about that. As important and absolutely vital as that is, and I've got no wish to downplay it, but I think it represented the need for the big root transformation of society that will root out racism, inequality, starvation, war, environmental degradation at a sweep, because it goes right to the root.
It does.
And for that, you know, we need grassroots movements and a kind of movement of movements, you know, like a network of networks. I think this thing will happen by networking.
Yeah.
I think the revolution will be networked. And the TikTok, what I like about the TikTok is that it was obviously like a network, something went viral.
Yeah.
Just pass this round your mates. And okay, in the scheme of things, it's a minor embarrassment to Trump, but you know.
I don't think it was a minor embarrassment, actually. I really don't.
Well, I mean, state power is still there. The army's still there. They're still spending $1 trillion a year on weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely.
You know, so
but
come
this
on.
This is only the beginning.
Let's put it in that perspective.
It was good for a start,
But it's very, very significant. Its significance isn't minor because it shows the power of networking.
Yeah.
And I think we need new social movements that will take to the streets. So what I'm seeing is the power of networking then. That is very, very significant. And it was almost casual, and it was very simple, and it was very sweet, beautiful. If that is in fact how it happened, and it looks as though that is how it happened. But also then, we want the networked organisations, Black Lives Matter, Extinction Rebellion, the trade unions, the Labour left, all those people that joined Corbyn because they have some ideals. And maybe a little touch of utopianism. 300,000 extra people. What are they doing? Seeing the time twiddling their thumbs being discouraged? Them people. You know, so you have a network of the networks.
Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth.
Just everything.
No, there's so many organisations. Yeah. If they join together, they would be unstoppable, I think.
And this isn't quite like the Labour Broad Church, which I think kind of has got a catch chance in hell of actually working. Because on the right wing, you've got people who actively tried to make sure that the election was lost so that Corbyn wouldn't get in, inside the Labour Party. The church, it's too broad a church to work. You've got people who are the enemy in there, as far as I can see, in the sense that they're kind of committed to neoliberalism.
Yeah.
And they want to give it a bit of a human face. Okay, you know, they're socially progressive. They want to put it in a nice sparkly wrapper, you know. But I think it's impossible. I don't think you can't dress it. You can dress it up, but that's all you will ever do. It's predicated on just raw selfishness, and it's not going to work. But the left, all those people that joined because of Corbyn, 300,000 people.
You know, they're all still there, and they all still want the better world that they want.
Yeah, but they are perhaps discouraged, you know. But I say this, this is my hopeful plan, is that we have these huge network social movements, highly active, willing to go on the streets, willing to use civil disobedience, non-violent civil disobedience. You'd be very careful with violence, very dangerous. But if there's enough, and if they're coordinated enough, and if they've got the intelligence and imagination that the 15-year-old showed, I mean, how encouraging is that? I feel encouraged by it, I have to say.
Yeah, me too.
But then all those networks network together, and they're able to coordinate, and across the planet. Yeah. It's going to take time to build. But it also enables people to build, like, specific interests. Like, people are more inclined to be interested in the climate or the oceans. People are a bit more inclined to be interested in labour rights. People who want to undo institutional racism. We can all get together. We're all pulling in the same direction. And we can network and coordinate. And there will be some sweet and simple opportunities to do that, as the wonderful younger generation have showed us.
And another bit of good news that makes me think that the Black Lives Matter movement is really starting to take hold is that a couple of very prominent British racists have been dethroned recently. First of all, we've got Nigel Farage being... he says that he left, I think, but I think he was politely pushed from his radio show platform. He had five nights a week spouting out his, like, hateful shit, and that's gone. And also we've got Katie Hopkins.
Yeah.
She's been banned from Twitter.
For life.
an absolutely hateful woman.
Yeah.
And really quite pleased to see the back of her. I mean, I know there's this issue about free speech and censorship and all the rest of it, but...
There is a real issue there.
There is an issue. That's for another time. Mm. Personally, I'm quite pleased that, hateful racists are banned off that platform. Mm. And also, Twitter put a warning in front of one of Trump's tweets for the first time. I can't remember what the warning was, but it was something like...
factually dubious or something.
Yeah. So there's been quite a bit of pushback. I mean, the fact that, you know, Nigel Farage has been taken off that particular airwaves is, I think, is quite a big thing.
Yeah, good riddance.
You know, and this is it's great. I wouldn't be surprised if this is happening in other countries as well.
Yeah.
So I hope some American racists have been dethroned as well as here. But I thought that was pretty significant. And there's just been loads of stuff happening in Britain. I mean, it really is. It's become, you know, something which could blossom into a world, as you said, a world-changing...
Yeah, well, it's doing it.
...movement.
It's
It's
doing it.
It's connecting with other organisations. And if we all do it together...
Yeah.
That's when we'll get somewhere.
To appreciate movements like Yanis Varoufakis' DM25. And the alternative media which are building. It's like the Navarra guys and similar people. Obviously, they only get a couple of thousand people watch, but the quality is very good. And they get people from all around the world, knowledgeable people, and people with grassroots knowledge to come and... strut their stuff, and it's very, very good. But on the subject of free speech, if you go back over the podcast, it might have been a couple of years ago. It's a podcast I did in Wolverhampton, walking down the canal. It's one I did on my own about free speech and about the ins and outs. Because I think there's need of nuance for the argument.
Yeah. About which we don't have time to cover here. But
I mean, the number what I said there is, and it's quite a fine analysis, I think, is that free speech can be used to end up with an end game of denying people free speech.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's about the limits of the ideals of liberty and equality. The only way of overcoming the limits of those ideals that mitigates their mutual exclusivity is the third and not often mentioned value of the French Revolution, fraternity. It should be sorority as well, you know, brotherly and sisterly love. If we have brotherly and sisterly love, we can allow liberty and equality at the same time. Otherwise, they cancel each other out. In fact, they cancel themselves out. Anyway, that's a whole other topic. And but I say, if you look back over our podcasts, you're probably going to have to go back a year. Over here, we've been here more than a year, so it's a couple of years back. You'll find that there is a... I think it's quite a good... It's off the cuff, but I think it's fairly detailed consideration of that matter. In fact, I would say just avail yourself. There's now getting on for around 200 podcasts on all manner of subjects. Some of them quite esoteric matters of, I don't know, epistemology and stuff of that type, but plenty of current affairs stuff. A lot of stuff about the environment, stuff about art, stuff about spirituality, a lot of stuff on yoga and the whole series on Lao Tzu, which we know on
Emin. Which we're still working on, yeah.
We've certainly done a good number of those as well. Plus some very, very original stuff. It's all good. So please avail yourself of it.
And while you're availing yourself of it and having a good look through our back catalogue, please remember that, unfortunately, during this time, our earning capacity is completely zero due to COVID. So we would really appreciate if you want to become a patron and donate a little bit of money every month. That would be extremely helpful because, you know, survival is one of the things that we want to do. Anyway, so there's quite a lot of positive stuff happening at the moment, so I hope you feel a bit empowered by this podcast. That was our thought, and we will speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening. Lots of love. Wash your hands. Dabochi. Over and out. Make knowledge great again. Is there anything else?
What, so now make knowledge greater with a bit more feeling.
Make knowledge great again.